John Boy Media has a new teammate. It's iHeart Podcasts. What does it mean? John Boy Media shows can now be found over at the Dan Patrick Show. That's right. How cool is that? Wake and Jake and Jimmy's Three Things have joined the iHeart Podcast and Dan Patrick Show family. And the best part, they'll still continue to be the same shows you know and love. If you couldn't tell, we're excited about this one, and thank you guys for listening.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 124th episode of Shea Station. I'm one of your co-hosts, Jack, a.k.a. Jolly. Joining me is Jerry Blevins. But as our friends on Farm to Fame say, when they have a very special guest, none of that matters today. We have maybe our most special guest ever.
I hope not.
The first legacy interview in Shea Station history, one I'm very, very excited about. This man has been with the Mets since 1980. He's the author of Mr. Met, the director of PR for decades on end. We are so, so excited to welcome Jay Horowitz to the Shea Station podcast. Jay, thank you for joining us today.
My honor, guy. My honor to be on a podcast, you and Mr. Blevins.
I think Steve Gelbs would feel
we can't tell Steve
that he's not considered a legacy since he's our first two-time guest.
Yeah, That's true.
Steve's a lovely place with hockey and Ben. And football.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you're the legend. Legendary.
Well, I'm old. I'm old.
Jay.
For those who don't know, why don't you give Jay a little bit of an intro?
Sure. I mean, Jay has been with the club for decades on end, still with the club in his 43rd year. You just put out a great message that I read a couple days ago about your time from your disastrous first interview to where you stand now. Big part of Old Timers Day. So people definitely had seen you there if they tuned into that broadcast. Jay, I mean, we have so many questions for you. I guess we'll start there, if that's okay with you, on Old Timers Day. I mean, the Cohen era Mets have been such a far cry from previous ownership in so many facets, but I think one of the biggest signs, especially for the more, you know, older fan, you know, fans like my parents who have been fans since 1969, Old Timers Day making a return and seeing all those old Mets come back to the field was a very, very special day. Can you kind of just take me through your experience of that day?
Well, it was great. You know, I had my 43rd apology to Mr. Blevins for not inviting him. Jerry, I'm ashamed to say I didn't realize how good you were. I mean, I went back and looked at your record, your one loss, your ERA. I'm going to be 89 when we have our next full time day, and you're going to wheel me in a wheelchair. I promise you, you'll be invited.
You don't have to apologize.
Oh, I'm so bad, Jerry.
You don't. I gave you a hard time. First of all, Jay and I are friends. I consider you a friend, Jay.
Yes, sir.
I one of my first moments as a Met when I felt like I made it was I got a butt dial from you.
Yes.
And I was just like, it's official, man. I made it. I got a Jay Horowitz butt dial. You don't have to apologize. I gave you a hard time because that's where we are.
I felt bad.
You shouldn't feel bad. There is so many Mets legends. I'm not that far removed. So I think it was better for the fans to get some people in that they haven't seen in a while. They get too much of this face as is. You don't want to dilute the product. So I get it. But you don't have to apologize.
To answer Jolly's question, when Steve took over, one of the things he wanted to do is have an Old Timers Day game. We hadn't had one since 94, so that's 28 years. And I just wanted to do it the right way. And ownership was great. Anything we wanted to do, we gave the guys rings, you know, two tickets for airplane tickets, hotel, meals. And we wanted to cover the decades. So we got 68 players back. We had, 462 Mets. We had Craig Anderson, Frank Thomas, Jay Hook, Steve Dillon. We had 69 Mets, Art Shamsky, Ron Sabota, you know, Cleon Jones. We had four managers, you know, Joe Torre, Willie Reno, Terry Collins, Bobby Valentine. And it was great. I mean, you know, the team was playing well at the time. The weather was great. The guys were excited about coming back. And we capped it off. You know, we got the permission to retire Willie Mays' number. So it was just a really great day. And, you know, now the problem is people said we could do it next year. And I don't think we could do it next year for right now because, you know, the zing is not going to be. We probably have to wait a little bit. What we are going to do, though, is we're going to bring back alumni for each of the home stands, you know, do autograph signings, social media stuff. So we want to keep, you know, the alumni tradition going. We had a great list. We had the Tom Seaver statue, Keith Hinnian's retirement, Gil Hodges Hall of Fame, a celebration of the Ohio's no-hitter, plus the old-time Mr. Games. So it was a great alumni year last year.
That's fantastic news. It's really cool to see a lot of Mets history honored, because I feel like, you know, ever since, you know, Citi Field came around in 2009, I felt like that was an element that was kind of missing. It felt like that era had moved on and we were not forgetting about it, but not appreciating it enough. And I want to take it back to the retired number aspect of that, because we finally get to see Keith Hernandez's number in the rafters, something that I feel is, you know, long overdue to this point. That was one of my most special moments as a Mets fan, but even more special for someone like my father, who, you know, grew up watching Keith watch those 86 Mets win the World Series. Can you speak to how special that was to you as someone who's been around the club for so long, got to know Keith all these years?
Like other teams, we've kind of negligent retiring numbers. We haven't done a lot of them. I think it was with Seaver, Piazza, Keith, Casey Stengel, Gil Hodges, and of course Jackie Robinson. We're going to do more of that now, but you know, Keith and I go back a long way. You know, he's the heart and soul of the 86 team, you know, with the unofficial captain, Davy Johnson's eyes and ears on the field. You know, it's really a shame to me he's not in the Hall of Fame. He should be in another Hall of Fame, you know. It's really you know, and what Keith, you know, done on SNY, his connection with the fans, it's just a really nice thing to be part of and see Keith recognized for what he did. There would be no 86 World Championships without Keith.
Exactly.
For sure.
Hello, everyone. It's me in a different outfit because I'm coming to you from the future, and I'm here to tell you about today's sponsor, DraftKings. Guys, the NFL playoff picture is locked in. Wildcard weekend is upon us. The Talkin' Giants watch party is going to be this Sunday. I'm going, and I'm very excited to see my New York Giants win a playoff game for the first time in a long time. And I'm going to place some bets on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat bet each day of the wildcard round this weekend. Just place any NFL bet of your choice, and if it loses, you'll get a free bet back up to $10. Action so good, why bet on the playoffs anywhere else? Of course, in a perfect world, we'd be betting on baseball right now, but football will have to do. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHEA, like Shea Station, S-H-E-A. New customers can bet just $5 on the NFL and get $200 in free bets instantly with our code, only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SHEA. Thank you to them for sponsoring today's episode. And now, back to the interview.
That's good. Yeah, what he's been able to do, the further removed from his playing career, I think the more impressive his numbers look, from defensive side to offensive side to leadership. I think some of those things get lost in today's, you know, data analytics. But if you really dive in and take a look, I think there's no doubt that I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame as a player.
Can I give you another example, Jerry?
Please.
Gil Hodges had gone 35 ballots without getting into the Hall of Fame. He's the only guy to have be over 63% three times and not get in. And, you know, Joe Torre, you know, for those committees, it's who's on the voting committee. Like Joe Torre was told the Gil Hodges story. You know, you can't, do you put in there that he lost 3 years from baseball starts, he served the Marines. We stood right by Jackie Robinson when Jackie was going through all this stuff. That's got to account for something, the character lead. And how do you quantify that stuff? Thankfully, you know, we had Joe was on voting committee, and the late Vince Scully wrote a great report for MLB.com talking about one time when they were in St. Louis and that they were throwing beer on Jackie and Gil stood right by him. And those words helped sway some of the people on the committee. And we had, you know, Cleon Jones called his own Fred Ferguson Jacobs, who was voting. He, you know, Cleon told what it was like to play for Keel. But going back to Keith, you know, I mean, nobody did it better. I mean, you remember a play, probably you know where I'm here, in 86, we had a fight in the game against the Reds. Gary Carter was playing third base. And Keith made one of the most unbelievable 3-5-4 double plays I've ever seen. Nobody feels his position better, you know, and clutch it after clutch it. So maybe, you know, you know, eventually he'll get into the Hall of Fame, I'm hoping.
I mean, we've seen the contemporary era committee that has gotten guys like Fred McGriff into the Hall of Fame that definitely deserved to get in there on the ballot and thankfully got in after the fact. So I'm hoping that that's, you know, something that can be true for Keith as well.
When I thought, who's the voting? It's so much, it really begs the point. Who's voting? Like, no offense to Harold Baines. When Harold Baines got in, Tony La Russa and Jerry Reinsdorf were on the voting committee.
Right. Exactly. And especially with like a lot of anonymous ballots where you don't know who's submitting these things.
Right.
Blank ballots that we see every year.
Hopefully Keith's day will come.
Yeah. I hope so too. You mentioned Joe Torre before, and I kind of wanted to ask you because I'm the young man on the block here over at Shea Station, and you were once, you know, the young man in 1980 trying to get your foot in the baseball world. You mentioned that Joe Torre was very, very important to getting yourself acclimated with the Mets.
I've never been in a major league clubhouse before. Joe introduced me to all his friends, Pete Rose, George Brett, Reggie Jackson, you know, I ate his restaurant in Manhattan, Ponte's. And he told me how to interact with the players. And our first road trip to Montreal, he took me to a tie shop and bought me 7 of the ugliest ties you ever want to see, these big fat ties. And I had to wear them the whole year. And to this day, Joe is a conglomerate now. He's a Hall of Famer, 19 million World Series rings. But I pick him up, pick up the phone, call him, and he'll answer my call. I mean, he's just a good friend. And I wouldn't have, whatever I am today, I wouldn't have gotten it without Joe's guidance and his, you know, it being there for me.
That's amazing.
Those are cool. We all need those guys to usher us in, make us feel comfortable, and to initiate us in. I wanted to get into a little bit more of who you are. There's some things not everybody knows, Jay. I think you're one of the most genuinely funny and earnest people I've ever met in baseball. And that's impressive because your job as the PR, head of PR for so long.
38 years.
That's a tough ask.
Yeah.
That is not easy to do. I've seen guys get chewed up and spit out because of how they handle players. Every time you talk to a player, for the most part, you're asking something of them to come and talk, to open themselves up for something. And that's not easy to do, Jay. Yeah. And you had a humble way of just being like, you know, I remember you'd always come up and be like, Jared, can you do this for me? And I'd be like, you'd be like, look, you know, I wouldn't ask you if I didn't need it, that kind of thing. And I'd always feel, because you're personally asking me, it's you have a way of doing that. How difficult was that specific part of your job to always, you know, handling some players? I want to get into your DeGrom relationship a little bit, but asking guys like DeGrom to do something that they may not feel comfortable doing.
Two things. I never wanted to be a suit, you know, to come down there. And I tried not to always ask when I went to the locker rooms. And I tried to treat the 25th guy like the number one guy. You know, I never tried to always ask. And, you know, and I didn't want to. It's all about trust, Jerry. The players had a trust in you that you were looking out for them. You mentioned DeGrom. You know, I'm about, let's see, Jake is what, 34. I'm like more than almost 40 years older than him, 34 years older than him. So I had a Jake as well as I did. He wasn't crazy about doing the things a lot of times. But see, two things. David Wright gave me credibility. If you remember, David Wright's locker was right next to him. When I used to go to the locker, we used to see David interact with me well. David considered me a friend. So I'm good enough for David Wright. Jacob figured I'm okay. So I had this little game with him. In his first Cy Young year, was trying to pitch it that the wins don't matter, that it's, you know, innings and, you know, strikeouts, innings. And I said, Jake, we're going to get this done, but we're going to have to do 9 or 10 interviews with specific writers from ESPN and, you know, who are voting. I got a hold of the voters thing that year. And we played a game. You remember we used to have this basketball net in the clubhouse?
Yeah, right above my locker for a while.
You say, Jay, this is what the thing is. If you make 4 or 5 shots, I'll do an interview today. And I never made one shot. But you know what? Because I never took myself seriously. Okay, what do you need me to do? The other thing I used to do is say, next day, I said, I need another interview. Well, this is what I want you to do today. Go out in the field. I want you to hit fungos to me and Steven Max. You got to hit like 10 consecutive balls without missing. I never did that. I was always willing to laugh at myself, Jerry. That's the thing is, you know, not take my job seriously. You have to develop the trust thing, you know, with the player. Can I personally with Jacob? It bothers me that some people after he left kind of took shots at him. And it really and truly bothers me. I don't want to get specific, but I knew what he was, what he is, and how much he was dedicated to the game. His walk-up song, I'm a Simple Man, that's him. You know, he never did commercials. He never was on social media. All he wanted to do is pitch.
Yeah. You got to respect that. There's guys that want to play baseball, and there's guys that want to play baseball and other things. Jacob didn't want to soak up the New York media and take advantage of being that. And it's his right to be like that. He understood and he did things, and you let him know that, hey, part of your gig is doing some interviews. And so you humbled yourself by putting yourself in uncomfortable, usually athletic, you know, situations where you're hitting fungos. And then he would put himself in vulnerable positions doing interviews. So
were you with us the first Yankee game when he came up? It was supposed to be who's the reliever on Houston now? He was with us. I forgot his name already. He started with us in
Montero
was supposed to be the big guy then. It wasn't DeGrom, and Jacob came up. Dylan G got hurt right about the time. And Jacob winds up pitching against the Yankees, pitches seven, shutting in one run or something. And I talked to him before. I said, Jacob, listen, you know, we'll take it for where it is. Don't run. Be there, win or lose. Don't hide. And, you know, he never forgot that thing. And he never turned me down with anything. He knew. Again, David Wright was so helpful to me with that. Because, you know, David gave me instant credibility with him, you know, when guys like, or Franco or some of the other guys came, they saw they interacted with me. So, you know, Jacob figured, okay, this guy's not a bad guy.
But, yeah, it's a trust thing.
He wrote the forward for my book too.
Right.
I did, which is absolutely amazing that you got him to do that. I'm surprised you're still working with the residuals and income off that book.
I'm the only guy who wrote a book, Jerry's Losing Money. I gave him more freaking books. I don't remember. I mean, I thought, listen, I was a little good because I wanted a New York Times bestseller list, but God, I gave away more books. I think everybody in the free world has got one of my books.
Not everybody. The same guy that you didn't invite.
Okay, Jerry.
I have a copy. I do have a copy, but I bought it off Amazon.
Well, good. Do I get any residuals from that or something? No.
Oh, well, I'll get you to sign it, though. I definitely want that.
Can't read it anyway, Jerry.
I wanted to mention your sense of humor. You told me a story, one of my first, maybe my second year there, 2016. And I just was laughing about you. And you made a comment about me on Twitter, like about my Twitter, and you appreciated it. And I asked you why you didn't have a Twitter. And you told me a story about like how when you first had Twitter, I think it might have been spring training, you were being sarcastic and breaking news. Do you remember that story at all?
Yeah, I mean, this is how the whole thing started. I got myself into a lot of trouble. Was I relate how I got to trouble one time? It was were you here when Shannon Ford was here, Jerry? You
know? No, unfortunately, I never. Yeah.
Had the so she was worked for me for 20 years. Great lady, great worker. Unfortunately, died of breast cancer at age 44. So Jeff Wilpont said to me, "If you could get 10,000 followers, we'll donate a check for $10,000 to her." So we got to 10,000 followers, and you know, unfortunately, I tweeted our checking account on my Twitter feed, and I almost got fired. And the other story was where I kind of calmed down. We were in Colorado where I was traveling in the early years, and I said, in Colorado, I'm not feeling well, hoping to get some medical marijuana. They say it helps. And my cell phone rang off the freaking hook the next day. And I, you know, so I've come now. I just tweet about alumni stuff, but I used to love to have stuff that, you know, maybe is it true, was it not true, you know. When
that was the story you told me, the medical marijuana. And then there was something about like a rain delay. or a starting pitcher change that you had like sarcastically tweeted out?
I wrote something that when Matt Harvey was in his heyday, that he was invited to the Ranger workout and he was going to miss a game. And Boomer Esiason went crazy on the air. How can he do that? And after the Red Sox won their first World Series, I tweeted, Mookie and Buckner made up. Mookie will fly to Boston to throw out the first ball to Buckner to make amends. And, you know, Buckner may rest in peace with Utah. He didn't do nothing about that. The Red Sox people were upset. But now I can't. I gotta calm down.
Yeah.
I got more mature in my old age now.
That, I mean, to me, that's hilarious. And that's what Twitter is. But when you are the media relations
PR, you can't do it.
You can't do it.
No, I can't do it.
Yeah. That's so good.
That's funny. I guess we'll jump more to speaking on. I wouldn't even call that a crisis because I find that absolutely hysterical. But I'm sure, you know, in your 43 years working this wonderful job, there's been plenty of, you know, situations you've had to be the guy to handle. Can you recall like your biggest PR crisis you had to endure?
Well, probably in the 80s, there was a cartoon in the Daily News. Was a father and a young kid standing from a courtroom in New York City. The kid said, Daddy, I want to see the Mets. And the father said, well, you're in the right place. Mm. Some of them are in jail right now. Just without making light of it, the drug stuff that Daryl and Dwight went through. I once checked an unnamed player into Smithers for rehab. I had a Met jacket on. And the nurse says to me, what's your problem? I said, no, it's not me. It's a guy next to me. So in order to get better, you have to admit what it is, drugs, alcohol, cocaine. Well, no, it's not me. I'm pretty good. It's this guy. But that the stuff with, you know, all this stuff went on with the, you know, with the different guys. I got to say something about Daryl and Dwight. You know, they had their off the field problems, but they both have turned their lives around. And Daryl is a minister now, travels the country, speaking against the evils of opioids. Dwight speaks to high schools. So they kept me busy. I never knew that 86 team. Every time it came in, I didn't know what the hell was going to happen. You know, it's police, this, that. We had Mike Tyson visit our workouts, you know, but it was probably that, you know, the drug stuff in the 80s. And Keith had his little foray too. But it was that would keep you a little bit busy, you know, during the hard times.
Again, that's a trust thing. The fact that you're able to help them through that, that's a commonality there. I know it was tough for you to transition out of your everyday role the alumni, but one of the things, having bounced around to a few organizations, one thing that the Mets were missing was that connection to their player past. And I thought this transition for you to come into the alumni is perfect. Because when I was with the Braves, I would run into, you know, Phil Niekro or Tom Glavine, all these guys all the time. Andrew Jones, you know, these guys would be in and out of the clubhouse, in the stand, signing autographs, doing interviews all the time. When I was with Oakland, they started to do that more towards the end of my era there. And you'd see Ricky Henderson, who's now a member of their front office, Raleigh Fingers, all these guys would come back. When I was with the Mets, like, I would see John Franco because he's, you know, New Yorker and he'd be around. I had the pleasure of running into Doc a few times and having conversations with him because we would be at other events together. But they were really missing that connection from their great players of the past to now. And I think that's one of those things that you can't analyze. There's no numbers to show how that impacts players because it doesn't show on the field. But to me, it shows you that the organization cares about their players of the past, which shows their current players like, hey, there's some history here. If I make an impact here, you know, I could be a part of something bigger than myself, bigger than my time on the field. And B, it shows the fans that it's not just about what this is. This is about our older generation of fans that can connect to the players too. And so I think that was the perfect transition because of the trust that you built with all the players that you came across your days as the PR guy. You're able to translate that and turn that into something beautiful. And when you reach out to somebody like Cleon Jones, say, hey, I want you to come sign some autographs over this weekend. We'll bring you around. You'll throw out first pitch and whatever the case may be. Cleon can say, you're going to take care of me. And then the fans of that era really appreciate it because they get to see a hero of their past while seeing some current players on the field. I love that transition for you. How is it, you know, you're only in the office 3 days a week. How have you done yourself personally transitioning into a more semi-retired role?
You know, to be honest with you, I didn't like it in the beginning because I'm not, you know, I love to travel, the eat dinners on the road with the guys, the camaraderie, the locker room, the bus trips, the plane trips. It took me a while, but then I like you said, I started to realize I can't do some good here. Because most of the guys, you know, I started in 80, the Mets were only 18 years old then, and I got to know a lot of the 69 Mets and 62 Mets. So I knew practically everybody in the organization. And it took me a while to get adjusted to it. You know, I don't like to go down on the field just to stand around. I'll go down there if I have a purpose with an alumni guy. I don't want to be a hanger-on, you know what I mean? And honestly, my last year in the locker room was 18, and I hardly know anybody there anymore. The transition has been unbelievable. I mean, Brandon Nimmo is there. I know Glenn Sherlock. I know Jeremy Hefner. But, you know, Jacob's gone, Noah, you know, Steven Matz, you know, the Wooler guys. There's nobody, you know, so there's not the, you know, I root for the Mets, hope we win, blah, 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 blah. But I don't, you know, I don't, it's not, I don't have the relationships I had before, but I think I'm doing some good with this stuff. You know what I mean? You know, doing things like helping Cleon with his charity work in Alabama, you know, doing some, like just this morning we got a call, a young lady, a woman in Long Island, her husband died of COVID. Can we get an alumni to call him on his birthday? It's just stuff like that. You know, you feel you can't quantify it in stats or in a paper, but you feel you're doing some good. And, you know, just to draw my relationships of the X amount of years to do different things. But, yeah, I'm in the office 3 years. We would call it. I was home now. I'm here 3 days a week. And, you know, the cones back, you know, Alex and Steve, but we're doing the big alumni supporters. So I know I have their support. And we're trying to do more with the number of retirements and the Hall of Fame stuff. So I think we're in a good place, Jerry. I'll be honest with you, it did take me a while. I had, you know, a year or so, it was tough not being a part of the main action, but I'm good now.
That's good because I understand, you know, that's a big transition for you. 40 years doing that. And right. Then all of a sudden you felt, maybe you thought you might be nervous because, you know, you're being sent out to pasture kind of thing. But I'm glad that you realized that.
No, I did. It took me a little bit. I can do some good in what we're doing.
That's wonderful because I really do think that was a part of the entire organization that was missing. And I think that connection to the past is the perfect, you know, the perfect position for you to be in now. Plus, we don't have to worry about you driving so late at night because holy crap, Jay.
I'm not exactly AJ Foyt is what.
But you drive like you are. I've seen you at like 3 a.m. when we land from, you know, from DC, and then you're just out heading to your hour drive home and you have no peripheral vision at all.
None.
I'm not even sure your headlights are on half the time and you made it home.
What quick story with my driving in 82. I was in the winter at Chase Stadium, and I get a call. George Bamberg was the manager then. He said, Jay, could you do me a favor? I think I'm having a heart attack. Could you drive me to the hospital?
I know this.
So I go down to George's locker room. We go in the car with snow, with light snow. So the first thing I do, I lean out the car. I ran over my glasses, okay? So I'm driving. My window doesn't defrost. I'm driving my head out of the window. And thank God he didn't have a heart attack. We get back to Chase and Jay, I'll never, ever, ever get to a car with you again.
And this was in 82. And I'm 82. I'm seeing you in 2017 driving at night. It's wild. One last question. One last story from you about your driving. You told me a story about spring training when you had an accident.
Well, it wasn't an accident. I went to the 7-Eleven by my hotel to get the newspapers. So I didn't see where I was going. So I drove off the pathway. I drove into a ditch right in front of 7-Eleven.
I mean, that's an accident.
Well, yeah. I didn't hit anybody.
It was a solo, singular car.
So I couldn't get, I was revving the car, damn thing wouldn't start. So I got out. I was at the tip of the boulevard there. So I walked back to the complex and I said, Brian, I called Brian Spose and I was Travis Sergey. He said, Brian, I got a problem. I put my car in a ditch. I couldn't start it. I said, no, you got to be kidding. No, Brian, I did. I started at 7-Eleven and it's there. I couldn't, I left it there. Walking is easier for me, Jerry, these days. So I don't drive anymore. I gave up driving for Lent.
I'm proud of you. I didn't know that. Yeah. The world is a safer place.
Yeah, no question.
And you're in the perfect area because you don't have to drive in New York. It's beautiful.
No, I do a lot of Ubers.
Okay. That's good.
I mean, I loved what you guys were talking about before with the connection to the old guard. I think a lot of people forget that in Citi Field now are a ton of new baseball fans, a ton of new Mets fans. I have the pleasure of speaking with a lot of them when I go to games and they know who I am. And a lot of the questions they ask me are similar to like, who's your favorite Met of all time? And I remember one time distinctly, I said my favorite Met of all time was R.A. Dickey because he was the ace of the team when I first really started watching every single day. And terrific story, terrific human being. And a couple of these kids had no idea who he was. So I think things like Old Timers Day and the retired numbers and that connection to the past through your alumni shows are just as important as everything going on with the team, because this is a team that's been around for so long.
What a year he had in 2012.
I know.
20 wins, Cy Young, comeback player of the year, wrote his autobiography. It was on 60 Minutes.
Unbelievable. And I mean, there's nothing quite like him. And I'm so glad that you got the chance to speak with him pretty recently. I think it was a couple weeks ago on your show.
Yeah, he's on the Hall of Fame ballot.
Yeah. It's really, really cool.
The way he started, you know, for R.A. Dickey to be on the Hall of Fame ballot is just tremendous, you know.
I mean, his story is wild. Born like without a UCL, like turned and transitioned.
He lost practically his whole bonus.
You know,
with the Mount Kilimanjaro.
Wild. Yeah. Well, Rack was a part of that.
Yeah. What's that?
Rack?
Yeah.
Dave. I'm thinking about reaching out. So we're talking about Rack. I would love to get Dave Racanello and Lange on this podcast at some point.
Oh,
because that would be this is the connection to some of the not just players on the field that make the Mets great, and some of our listeners are like really true diehard Mets fans, and I get to possibly introduce them to some people that they don't know. If you're a Mets fan, you know who Jay Horowitz is, but that's some of the stuff that I think people that truly appreciate the team as it is.
Yeah, they've been around a long time too.
Dave's been, his story is wild. Like, you know,
Jerry, is Dave the guy who holds the Philly cheesesteak record?
Yes.
He is, right?
Well, I think it was broken though.
Oh, it got broken.
I think somebody broke his record. Yeah.
Isn't he like 18 cheesesteaks?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, but Rack is
cartons of milk too, was the other thing.
Cartons of milk. At some point I'll try to get him on. He's top notch, you know, royalty in there. I don't know who he's hanging out with. Rack. He was with David Wright forever as his best friend.
And then DeGrom,
and now DeGrom's gone. Who's he gonna attach to? Pete?
Probably
Lindor, because he needs to keep the clout in the clubhouse.
Yes, I get you.
All right. Oh, man. So you got dedicated this April. The booth is now Jay Horowitz. Like, it's amazing.
Great honor.
And you deserve it. I'm glad. Again, these are some of the things that this – I have – again, I won't have a bad word to say about the Wilpons, because they were the ones that were there for me. They treated me well. I have a good relationship with Fred and Jeff. But with Cohen, he's done something that I'm so happy about. But, you know, it was sad for me to see the Seaver statue go up posthumously. They've done a good job of honoring guys when they can be there. Keith Hernandez for his jersey retirement.
Right.
Your public relations, like the booth, the radio booth going and being named after you, where you can go out and throw out the first pitch. Like, what kind of honor is that to you? And tell me about that whole experience.
I was a small, you know, grow up in Clifton, New Jersey, diehard baseball fan, loved Willie Mays and the Giants. My dad told me all about sports. And just to have a press box dedicated to me, it's really unconscionable. You know, I mean, I just couldn't believe it, you know. And you know, when I go up there and see my, I just can't believe my picture is still up there. But I want to say, well, you brought up a good point about the Wilpon. You know, Fred hired me as a young kid out of college. I always worked for him for 40 plus years. You know, it wasn't all bad, Jerry. You know what I mean?
What, I agree. I understand.
Now is great. But to categorize everything before is all bad is not true either, you know. And Jeff has always been in my corner, you know. You know, what he did for Shannon Ford before she passed. Jeff was not an outgoing guy. He liked to keep to himself, but he did a lot of good things behind the scenes. It used to kill Fred and Jeff when we lost. It wasn't like we didn't spend. It made some, had some bad contracts. You know, Oliver Perez, Castillo, Pedro didn't really work out after the first year. He got hurt. Santana got hurt. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like it was, you know, El Cheapo, you know, before. But I mean, Jeff and Fred have always been, when they had a dedication, Fred was there for me. So I don't want to, you know, I mean, what's going on now is great, but what went on before wasn't totally all bad either.
I agree. And I don't want you to feel like you have to defend the Wilpons, but your personal relationship with them, as is mine. Like Fred and I used to talk about pitching. He was a left-handed pitcher in high school. We used to talk pitching, you know, he's like, how are you going to throw to Harper, you know, this tonight? And we would chat, and I enjoyed all of
it. When we lost, you know,
feel whatever you're allowed as a Mets fan to feel a certain way. And there are things that happened during that era that you can be truly upset about, but your personal relationship, my personal relationship aside,
it's great.
Cohen was able to dedicate or be a part of the dedicating of the press.
Yeah, he was there too.
Fox to you. A lot of people were there.
Yeah, I was on.
And you threw a strike, right?
I did. Terry Collins, my good friend, was there. Johnny Franco was there. And I got COVID a week and a half after that.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah, so. You know, and it can't all be.
No, kidding. But no, it's really an honor. I mean, for someone like me to have something, you know, like when I kick the bucket, whatever it is, the press box will still be there. So,
exactly. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you deserve it, man. Well, it's pretty cool. I went in there. I got to do a game in the booth late last year, and I was up in the press box, and to see, you know, Jay Horowitz press box, like,
meant a lot. It really does. Yeah, I just wish, one, my only regret is my father died in 1970, and he never really saw me work for the Mets, and I know he would have been really proud and really thrilled to see me work for a Major League Baseball team. So that's, you know, I mean, he died at an early age. My mom went to the 86 World Series, so she'd experienced that. So, and she became a good, big sports fan too.
That's glorious. That's really cool. Is there anything that you've got to promote here coming on? Because I think we're going to get close to wrapping up. Do you have anything coming up that you want to plug?
Just to pledge a chat with you, you know, and I think next year's going to be a great year. I think we're in a good place where we are, and you know, and I want to just keep the alumni stuff going on. I think we got a good thing going next year. We bring them back for the homestand, and I really want to do is have an autograph signing every homestand in the Hall of Fame club, you know, to do that, because I think it doesn't have to be Joe superstar. The fans want to meet players, and I think they have the interaction, and I just want to keep that going. And the feedback I've gotten, the people like what we're doing with the alumni. The Hall of Fame, the old timers game was the hype. We maybe don't do a old timers game, but we keep the tradition going, keep the interest going. That's what my aim is, to keep, you know. And the more guys we can bring out and back into the Met family, the better. You know, we want guys who have been around a lot to bring them back in, you know, and that's what my goal is.
Good. Well, you're doing a glorious job. I think your legacy, apart from even the press box dedication, will last forever, because the impressions you left on all the players and all the PR, the people, I mean, Harold and Ethan that are still there that were, you know, your proteges, I think they learned so much from you. We did as players. So
the one thing I try to treat everybody like you want to be treated and treat the, don't cater to the superstars.
Yeah.
You know, just treat the 25th guy like the number one guy, and you'll be good. I promise you, the next old timers game, you'll be my number one invite.
I won't hold you to the number one invite, but I you know, anything you need from me.
All right. I'm there. John, nice meeting you too, John.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jay.
Really, thanks for the time, guys.
All right, Jay. See you, buddy.